Charlotte soccer show road trip. We are recording on our way back from Philadelphia. We're on the Baltimore, Washington Parkway here, headed back to the Queen City. Danny's driving at the wheel. I'm sitting here in shotgun up front. It was a loss last night, Danny, but we had a great weekend. I'm excited to chat with you about our experience, the game, of course, and what I thought was one of the best, you know, soccer atmospheres in MLS that I've seen. It was a great night last night in Philly, wasn't it?
Absolutely special night, John. It was great to be in your ancestral homeland of Delaware County, Pennsylvania.
Delco.
Delco, as it's known colloquially, and if you're friends, it's friends call it Delco. And it was great to be in Delco, facing the Delco Union, as we started calling them, and hung out with your fam, hung out in your spot, got to go see a great soccer match. It was a really special night, and it was extremely unfortunate, the result, and to sort of have this great night, and then all of a sudden, the last second, the final kick of the game, all of a sudden, boom, you go home a loser. But it almost was incidental to the enjoyment of the night and this great road trip that we've been able to do. So really just kind of one of those fan experiences that makes you appreciate the fact that you get to be a fan of a soccer club. Even despite a loss, I'm feeling great this morning. And Johnny, we're normally drinking beers when we record these episodes. I just want to assure everyone we are not drinking and driving. Maybe slightly hungover, but the coffee helped with that. So life is good on the road here on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway.
Yeah, and that's right.
Can't wait to talk about this game and the trip, and it's kind of a fun little experiment here we're doing with the road trip episode.
Well, it says that there's 5 hours and 56 minutes left in the drive. One thing I can promise you is that this podcast is not going to be 5 hours and 56 minutes.
No.
But we're going to talk about some fun takeaways that we have from the weekend, both on and off the pitch. Starting with Wilfred Zaha. They hated Wilfred Zaha.
It's always Zaha, right? You know, it's just something about that guy. He just draws attention. They hated him from the very beginning.
We got to see Dino up close and have a really nice experience watching him manage this game, seeing how he talked to his assistants, seeing how engaged he was into the match. Watching him up close and personal bitch about the referees once again.
Right. Dino and the fourth official, a love story. It's like the will they, won't they rom-com of the season, for sure.
The Philly fan experience, we got it. Just so, for what it's worth, we did get the Philly fan experience. Yes. We will tell you exactly what happened. It wasn't as bad as what you'd maybe see at an Eagles game.
Yeah.
But we certainly got some shit thrown our way. Especially when that winning goal went in.
Thankfully, it wasn't batteries. Yeah, I was just glad they weren't throwing batteries, but they were throwing their words for sure.
And we got, I think last night was, now that I'm thinking about this, and we didn't discuss this pre-show, so I'm excited to talk about this, is, you know, we had a window, a glimpse into what life would be like without Patrick Aujamain last night. But we also got a window into another alternate reality of what life could have been like with Ben Bender.
Yes, exactly.
It was phenomenal to see, of course, at one time, Charlotte's favorite son, Ben Bender, now with the Philadelphia Union. He gets the start, and he plays really well.
The fans around us were loving Ben Bender. It was kind of like something about Ben Bender, something about Wilfred Zaha makes people just want to boo him. Something about Ben Bender makes people just want to cheer him. It is what it is. But it was crazy to see him out there making an impact, having, you know, creating chances on offense for Philly and working in a system where he just could never seem to quite fit in Charlotte once Dean Smith got here.
I really do think that if I could have it my way, Ben Bender would have been in the starting lineup for Charlotte FC last night.
Yeah.
I just feel like there was a little bit of an issue in the midfield that Ben Bender could have solved for this team. I'm not going to harp on it, but it was a bit of a reality check. It was a dose of truth serum for me last night that was like, man, we cut this kid. Mm-hmm. And props to the Philadelphia Union. Who's their manager? The Union manager?
Oh, you got me. You stumped me. You stumped me. It's not Jim Curtin. I know that, but yeah.
Well, I'm gonna give props to not Jim Curtin for starting the kid. putting Ben out there against his former club, and you could see that he was playing with an edge. Picked up a yellow card as well, Ben did. Because he was trying to get stuck in and really, really impressed me. It really impressed me. We sent him away to the Tampa Bay Rowdies, and he's come back a Philadelphia Union man and has found himself into what I think is an unbelievable landing spot for the kid. An unreal landing spot for the kid. You're talking about first place Philadelphia Union, who gets another 3 points last night. Ben Bender gets the start. Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, an amazing, amazing landing spot for Ben Bender. And I think maybe Zoran Krenata should have a little bit of egg on his face.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think that Zoran felt great about that, watching Ben go out there and be one of the more influential players on the pitch for the 60, 70 minutes that he played. It's frustrating. And, I mean, the goal of this episode maybe is not to get into too deep in the tactics, but, I mean, we could talk about where Ben Bender would have fit. Would you take him over Pep Biel? But, unfortunately, I think that that conversation leads to some dark places when it comes to the captain and whatnot and his effectiveness. So we may table that one for a future day. Yeah. But shout out to Bender. I hope he had a good night. I hope he felt great going to bed last night, for sure.
There's no doubt about that he did. Like, I can guarantee you that he did, for sure. That's one of those. Yeah, there's revenge games, and they make a huge difference, and that's what we saw last night, for sure. I let's just go back to Zaha for a second, because maybe on TV it came through, maybe it didn't. But the way that the Philadelphia fans reacted to Zaha was remarkable. Every time he touched the ball, he was booed. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about a player that was out there playing well. He scores a goal, a beautiful volley, ties the game in the second half. It makes a huge impact here, and an incredible celebration. I just wanted to get your thoughts on just kind of like what it was like to see Zaha in a road atmosphere. Like, do you think that he relishes that? Like, do you think that as a player that's new to this league, he goes into that atmosphere? I think the question I want to ask you is like, do you think he enjoyed his football last night?
I think he loved it. I think he absolutely loved it, for sure. I mean, he is a shithouser. I'm not going to be naive and say that I have no idea where all the Zaha hate comes from. I mean, he's a shithouser. He talked himself into a yellow card last night. He was fouled. The foul was called properly, and the guy received a yellow card for fouling him. And then Zaha couldn't let it go, and he got a yellow card for dissent of a call that went his way.
Yeah. Danny, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. I appreciate you trying to make eye contact with me as we're trying to do this podcast, but I would appreciate you keeping your eyes on the road.
Fair enough. But Wilf is just that type of guy that he feeds off it. He said it in multiple press, times he's had a microphone in his face this year. Like, he feeds off it. He's that guy that takes the booing and the energy from the crowd and lets it feed him. And it didn't start this way, but it got to the point, even like every touch, the Philly fans started booing him every touch. Pretty much after he got the yellow card, they started doing that.
Yeah.
And then he was able to rub it back in their faces by scoring the equalizing goal. And he made a meal of his celebration. He put the hands to the ears and everything.
His celly was phenomenal.
Yeah, he was looking up into the Philly crowd. Right in front of us, it was great. We were fortunate enough to be in the right spot for that. And I get it. He's just that guy. You know how it is with some people. Some people are just the center of attention. Of any room they walk into, they become the most dynamic person in the room. He's just that guy. So I get it. I think he definitely enjoyed his football. I think he would have liked a lot more touches in the first half, probably. I think there was a chance. I think Charlotte went toe-to-toe with Philly. Again, we're not necessarily doing game breakdown, but I thought it was a really good Charlotte performance. They conceded in stoppage time. They conceded two goals but in stoppage time of either half, and probably should have won the game. I'm sure Dean Smith probably, I haven't listened to the presser from last night, but I'm sure at some point he dropped one of his famous, we could have won the game things that he always says after every loss, and I couldn't disagree with him this time. As far as Zaha, to answer your question, Johnny, I think he loved his football last night. I think he got everything he's looking for, other than the result. He got the goal, he got some hate, and he got to go out there and dance around some fools.
I asked the question that way because I think this season, for me anyway, maybe it is for him, maybe it is for the club, I always felt like this was kind of a trial. It's a new experience. It didn't work out in Turkey at Galatasaray. And I thought to myself, and I always had, like, is it going to work out in MLS? Is it going to work out in... is it going to work out in... Almost missed an exit there. See, I tell you, I tell you to keep your eyes on the road. And you're so distracted at this. No, I'm just kidding. It's an
interesting experiment we've got going. We made the exit, though. Yeah.
So I asked the question that way because I just always thought it was going to be an experiment this season. And I thought there was a chance that Zaha came into MLS and said, this is not for me, and I'm going to go do something else instead. And I, after seeing the reception that he gets at home, if that's the way this is going to be for Zaha, where he's so loved at the keep and he goes on the road and he's the villain, I mean, wow, that is a really fun way to enjoy the final couple of years of your career. I just hope that, and I think the biggest issue of the entire conversation, right? The biggest issue as we broach this, as we cross the Potomac River here.
Rolling over the Potomac, baby.
The biggest issue for me is, despite all of that, his team around him still throws up all over themselves like they always have.
Yeah.
You add Wilfried Zaha into the mix, but it's still conceding an added time in the first half. Conceding with the last kick of the game. I mean, as we head into Virginia right now, literally crossing the state line into Virginia, it's like the thought that I'm having is...
Hopefully it's Virginia's for lovers.
Well, it is. We do know that. Yes. That is. Yeah. And I think... I have this prevailing feeling that Zaha is not going to be the guy that fixes that type of issue.
Right.
Zaha did exactly what he was signed to do. He comes in, he dominates the game, he dominates the ball, he scores the goal, and it's like, come on. Mm-hmm. It's the same old Charlotte FC, despite signing a guy like Wilfried Zaha. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's the big story. That's why I don't want to talk about the tactical side of the match, right? We can have tactical discussions. We can go player by player. We can do player ratings. But at some point, you've got to say to yourself, 3.5 years into this project, that Charlotte FC's identity, without a doubt, is it's a team that's horrible on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've gone to the road games. Right. I've been there.
Right.
I still haven't seen a win.
Yeah.
And this was an opportunity.
I'm trying to think if I have. I don't think I have.
No. Nobody sees Charlotte. There's only been like four wins ever on the road, five wins ever on the road.
I've been to Orlando, Atlanta, Nashville, D.C., Austin, and now Philadelphia, and I still have yet to see a road win. That's crazy.
And to me, that's like the identity of the team, and it's also the identity of the team also is conceding at inopportune times.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is the next phase for this club. Like, how do you figure out a way to overcome that? Because that's who you are, and you could see it in Toronto.
Because Zaha was supposed to be that way. Zaha was supposed to be the way that we overcame that.
And he was.
And he's here doing what he's asked to do, and we're still a shit club that concedes and can't even show any teeth on the road. And again, they did show teeth last night. They went toe-to-toe with Philly, and they won the possession battle narrowly, 52-48, I think. And Charlotte FC played well, but they couldn't escape their destiny, their identity that you're identifying here, John. Charlotte FC, in the end, they were still Charlotte FC, which is dumb concessions and ultimately finding ways to lose on the road.
And you've got to admit that a lot of times that falls on the manager.
Sure.
And I think we have some insight on Dean Smith that we want to share on the podcast, for sure, considering, you know, we got a chance to see Dino up close. You can go to our socials.
Incredible.
At For The Crown Baby on X, Charlotte Soccer City on Instagram. Go to Charlotte Soccer Show on YouTube as well. Danny's cooking up some shorts last night. Follow us on YouTube. That's, like, really where you want to follow us. If you're listening to this podcast, it's because you're an OG Tifos.
Right.
And we still love doing the show for you.
Yep.
But Danny's got some great content on YouTube as well. And you'll see that what you'll see is our ability to really get a pulse, really get the temperature of how Dean Smith acts on the sideline. And happy Father's Day, first of all, to you, Danny.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
As I'm talking to you, my dad was able to come to the match with us last night, which was absolutely fantastic. So happy Father's Day to my dad as well.
It was a joy being next to, being with you guys, just riding shotgun on your father-son party was great.
It was fantastic, and we enjoyed it. And I think I want to start with the end, not the beginning.
Okay.
The beginning was nice. I mean, we got a chance. Yeah. You got a chance to talk to Dino before the match. We'll get to that.
Talk to him in the tunnel.
We'll get to that.
I hugged him.
At the end of the match, in added time, when Tiger Smalls goes down, my dad looked at me and he says, "Man, the manager's getting a little too comfy with this. He thinks he already got this game to the finish line. He thinks that this is a draw already. He's getting lax. He looked up into the Philly fans were giving him shtick.
Yep.
He looked right around. He turned around. He laughed at them. He pointed at them.
Which, I mean, what's you going to do? I mean, he's waiting for the medical team to, they're working with Tiger. There's nothing else he could have been doing. It's not like he was shirking his responsibilities in that moment, but he was letting his guard down.
For sure. And
I offered him a beer.
You did offer.
I said, Dino, you need a Dos Equis? He said, no, I'm good. Thanks, though.
And then he gave me the For the Crown.
Yeah, he put the crown up. Yeah. I think that they loved to see some traveling support, up close and personal like that. They were as happy to see us as we were to see them, I think. But it might have got a little just too comfy, like your dad said.
It just time wasting and managing the end of an added time situation on the road to try to get that draw. To your point, and I think you said it properly, you can't let your guard down.
Right.
You can't let your guard down. And even though it's a player mistake, I know there's people talking about Dumbia's throw in late in the match and just the player standing around and watching that happen.
Right, it was fluky.
There was a missed kick, a sliced shot
that bounced right to the guy who shot it through the legs of the defender. Bingham couldn't see it. All that is true. Right. But it shouldn't have got that close.
Right. Yuri Tavares was being prepared as a time-wasting sub who never came on the pitch.
Right. Yuri Tavares, they yelled at him. They said, Yuri, he sprints over from the corner. He starts to get ready, and then he stops and he puts back on his white, bench shirt instead of the jersey.
If Yuri Tavares comes on the pitch as a time-wasting sub in that situation, when the ball goes out for a throw-in, I think you could make the argument that Charlotte FC finishes this game with a draw.
Right. Amazing to think that it was literally the failure to make a time-wasting sub cost you a point, which is insane. But you can make that argument. You can make that case very strongly, I think. And it's unfortunate because it was great seeing Dino work up close. It was great seeing him work with his assistants. It's great. It was awesome to hear him dropping a lot more F-bombs, than I would have thought. There was at one point when
they don't know the fucking rules.
Yeah, he's talking around the officials. Yeah, they don't know the fucking rules. He's like yelling that to his assistants, about the referees, for some commiseration, some backup. And it was awesome. And I wouldn't have traded that. I love Dean Smith. I think he's just as much as a fan can sort of love a manager. That's me and Dino. I saw him in the tunnel pregame. We were at the LSA club there, and it's a cool setup they have. And I was able to give him a dap him up. I'm like, Dino, I love you, man. Bring it in, And he's like, hey, thanks for coming, he does. I guarantee you, he does not know my name, but I mean, he probably recognizes my face a little bit enough to know this guy's a Charlotte superfan. So all of that was cool. I loved it, but I just hated it, and I'm just as guilty. I was the one Dino, you want a beer? Haha, and then 2 minutes later, game-winning goal, Philadelphia, and we all walk out of there, slumped shoulders. But I don't know, man.
We all walk out of there. I mean, most people walk out of there feeling they're top of the table. Nice, easy win over an expansion team that had a tough time coming to Philly and getting a result.
What was that? That was the part of that Philly fan experience we were getting is that I had a good time because there were some young kids. There were some team kids. There were youth soccer players sitting right behind us. and they're having a good time, and one kid yelled out, yeah, oh, Ben Bender, that's my brother, man, yeah, and, like, I was bantering with them, and it was good nature. There was some other fans that were a little less good natured. One guy was like, you're allowed to stand up and cheer for your team, but every time you do it, you owe me a beer. Like,
go for that. That's good. That's good, yeah, banter. That's good banter. That's good banter.
Yeah.
Because you know what is poor banter is when the fan interaction started, it was in the first half, and the situation was the Zaha yellow card. Remember when Zaha was fouled,
right,
the Philadelphia player gets the card.
And he shithoused his way into a yellow.
And he basically, Zaha was begging for a yellow card. It's almost like he wanted to become a villain at that point.
Right, yeah. He's like, no, ref, you're giving me a yellow also. Yeah.
And at that point, a fan like four rows behind us stands up and goes, Zaha, you're a piece of shit. Throw him out of the game. So I turn around and I'm not bantering with the guy. I'm not saying I turn around and just look at him.
Yeah.
I'm like, and the guy looks at me. He goes, "You're in my fucking city. You're in my city." I was like, actually. So that's how it started. And the funny part is when the game winning goal happened, when the last kick happened, that same guy ran down the stairs.
Yeah.
Turned around and started talking shit to you pretty good.
He was jawing, yeah. And he was like, ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, dude.
Yeah. It was, but anyway, it was a real, but it
my,
was.
My
it
days
was,
of getting in fights with opposing fans at stadiums, thankfully, are behind me.
Yes. Yes. But again, like I said, there was nothing, I think, out of bounds. I think it was good banter. I think it was what sports is supposed to be. You know,
right.
Like, there was no issue I would tell anybody. I would tell any Charlotte FC fan to go to Subaru Stadium to see a Charlotte FC match on a Saturday. I would.
Yeah.
It's a great soccer-specific stadium.
The view was incredible. It's really cool with the bridge going over. You get some awesome just, like, sight lines and stuff.
Right. And I think that it's a – as we're making the drive now on 95 South.
Making pretty good time, by the way.
We are making good time. As we're making the drive right now and – I'll tell you, it's doable. I think if you wanted to take a long weekend, Danny drove up first thing Friday morning. I was already up there. I flew up on Thursday. Get up early on Sunday and get cruising. That's why we're doing this shit. You know, it's 7:30 in the morning as we're talking right now. We got out of Philadelphia at 5:30 because if you can do the first 4 hours going home from Philadelphia from 5:30 to 9:30, you've got a chance to make really good time. It's just about getting through Baltimore. It's about getting through Washington, D.C. It's a tough drive. There's no doubt about it. But if you do it at the right time, you can enjoy the road trip for sure. And that's what we're doing right now. We're enjoying what I think is a great experience for us for the weekend. And I know there was a lot of other Charlotte fans in attendance as well. It was great to see the club. If you go watch the replay of Zaha's goal, the MLS season pass TV crew cut to the 20 or so fans up in Subaru Park, Charlotte FC fans. Although, you know, respect to all those who made the trip, but I mean, Zaha's celly was pretty epic. They probably should have stayed with it.
Yeah, exactly. So just if we're nitpicking Apple directing choices here, yeah. I mean, I always think doesn't matter whether it's Apple, ESPN, Fox, whoever. I always think directors cut away from good shots too quickly. So yeah.
So I think before we get into this conversation, that is like a window into life without Patrick Aujamong, and kind of what the rest of the season looks like. I think we just need to just identify what the standings are. Like, Philadelphia, like we said, top of the table. That win keeps them top of the table. Vancouver does have a game in hand, though, and is only 2 points back. So Philadelphia is, and
I'm worried about
Vancouver. To put that game into perspective, like, Philadelphia is one of the best teams in the league right now, and Philadelphia is the team that is playing for a Supporters' Shield title right now.
And they beat us by scoring two stoppage time goals.
But it's a thin margin. You know, that's just how the game is. And Charlotte FC is currently ninth. And unfortunately, they're tied with Chicago. at 25 points, and Chicago has a game in hand. Oof. And New England, who is at 23 points in 11th, has two games in hand. The table to me right now is what I would call, if Chicago and New England take advantage of those games in hand, mm-hmm. we're talking about a free fall.
Right.
We're talking about the bottom falling out.
Right.
We're talking about being out of the playoff picture.
Right.
Being in 12th place. 12th place.
5 weeks ago, we were saying supporter shield, supporter shield. And now it's like struggling to make the playoffs. It's crazy. I mean, that's, the campaign is long, but this has been a pretty rough stretch of it.
And the problem is, man, not necessarily the bunch in points, because now all of a sudden you're in the fight for the playoffs. It's the same thing again.
Right.
That we saw last year, that we saw the year before that.
And we play Chicago 2 weeks from now. I mean,
yes, and we're going to play all these teams. There's a lot of season left. Half the season left, for the most part. But when I look at this, the problem is, now you're talking about at 25 points, you're 7 points separated from third. You're 8 points separated from second. And you're 12 points off of first. It's just like, the points gap is just, it's getting almost too large to overcome. Mm-hmm. A 6 point gap to fourth. And the whole idea was, heading into this season, is to finish in the top four and get a home playoff series and get that series at home. Two out of three, being able to have that home field advantage at the keep. And right now it's like, shit, I don't think that's going to happen. And I'm going to go on the record right now and say, this team is not finishing in the top four. There is no fucking chance that this team is finishing in the top four, especially with the state of the midfield right now, mm-hmm. especially with the state of the fullback situation, mm-hmm. and unfortunately with the state of the goalkeeping situation as well. I listened to your podcast with, was it Neil Saka? Is that right?
Kalen Carr. Yeah. Neil was 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
2 weeks ago. Kalen Carr I listened to. I guess I didn't listen that closely. I did listen to the show on Thursday as I was flying up, to give myself a nice little preview of the action. And fuck, man, he was talking about Bingham starting, and you were like, I don't really know about that. Like, I think Christian Felina's good. Yeah, you were there.
I threw cold water on it. Yeah,
I thought I was on your side. I was like, Dino's not going to start.
Right,
David Bingham in this match.
Yeah, I thought with the bye week that sort of reset everything.
And then Bingham ends up in the lineup, and all of a sudden, this team has, like, goalkeeper issues, too?
Right.
What?
The reigning goalkeeper of the year now finds himself benched.
And after the game, Dino was asked about it. And he said that he had a decision to make. Mm-hmm. That he decided to give Cali a break.
An extended mental break.
And he had a tough decision to make, and he decided to roll with Bingham last night, and I think Bingham made some big saves.
Bingham made one snap save. I mean, it should have been 1-0 in about the 30th minute, about halfway through the first half or so.
Yep.
There was a spot where Philly had worked a really good chance in the box, and Bingham literally just had to make an instinct, like diving down to the side save, and he made it. It was a little bit lucky, but it was good preparation. And the Jesus Bueno goal that they scored in the first half was a wonder strike. So he didn't really get beat by anything bad, and then the game-winning goal was just kind of a tough spot for him. It was a little bit of a fluky situation. So Bingham played really well. I think the goalkeeping question remains after that performance last night, because, I mean, what did Bingham do wrong last night? I don't think anything.
Yeah, it'd be nice to be able to talk to David Bingham about, you know what, you're really playing well. U.S. Open Cup run is yours.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to be able to say that, but crashed out of that competition mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Things are not going well right now for this club. And the one thing that we didn't mention is part of this team's identity, right? We kind of took the negative view, which is fine. I mean, that's because it's true. Like, there's no way to argue. Like,
coming off a loss, yeah.
Well, you're not just coming off a loss. There's just no way to argue against the fact that this team is not good on the road.
Right. A loss that epitomized those traits is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well said. Yes, yeah. I think that's the context that's important. It's not just bitching after a loss. Yeah. It's like, it's a bigger conversation. And that's why I didn't want to make this just about the Philly game. Because the way that the game was lost, we've seen that over and over and over.
Right.
And anyway, the strength of this club, and the other side of the coin is that this team is incredible at home. And the lack of home matches right now is the problem.
Right.
But when Charlotte FC does not play at home, this team is not the same. And when they get a run of three or four home matches, it feels like they're one of the best teams in the league.
Like we saw at the start of the season in March and April.
So, yes, I'm talking about not making the top four and feeling like that's not going to happen. Like, yeah, this team could have a run of home matches. Come July, come August, September, finish the season out and climb up that table. But that's what that is it. That's the solution here. I'm just telling you. Like, they're not going to get better on the road. I don't think that they're going to go out this season and be a really good road team. I think they're going to have to scratch and claw for draws, and that's going to have to be good enough on the road.
Yeah.
But at home, like, that's where the money's going to be made. And just I'll encourage the supporters to keep showing up at home, to keep supporting this team at the bank, because they need it. Like, we need it. Like, that right now, Charlotte FC is a team that is eating at home and is starving on the road, and I don't think that's going to change this season. And the club needs to figure out a way to win on the road. And I think winning on the road, one of the first things you said to me as I started to go down this MLS rabbit hole, Danny, was it's really hard to win on the road in MLS.
Yeah.
It's been 3.5 years I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah. But you have to do that hard thing to be an elite club.
Right, because a lot of clubs are good at home.
Right.
And the fact that Charlotte is good at home is great. But
everyone's good at home.
To make that next step, you have to be able to perform on the road. And my big question to you is, if Patrick Aujamon's in the lineup last night, I'm not saying but how different, like,
right,
what did it look like without him? From your perspective, because I can share how I feel, but I want to know from your perspective, because I'm definitely more of, I think, of a Patrick Aujamon, like, truther, if you will, a fan, like,
right,
maybe than you are. I know that you respect him, I know that you love him, I think he's great, but I'm the person that's like, without Patrick Aujamon, we're not good.
You're right, yeah. It's like, you might, like, you're a fan of Pat almost on the level of just the whole fan. He represents the club.
That's right,
yeah,
yes.
For sure, which I get, totally. For many good reasons. I think, so, I like Toke Lamotte. This is not necessarily a slight on him. He was completely invisible last night and did not make, he made zero impact on the game whatsoever. I mean, maybe some coaches could point to some data or say he was occupying defenders or something like that opened some space up for Wilf. But to me, Toke Lamotte, he was just out there running wind sprints. He really did almost nothing.
Well, for what it's worth, Dino does like his strikers to run wind sprints out there.
yeah. So I think it was a game that was calling out for a big Pat, especially, because of the way Charlotte did work chances. Those were the type of chances you want to find Aujamon there. There was a spot where it was Charlotte's offense was that long ball over the top, but these were long balls over the top to BL and to Zaha that were going, and you would want Pat to be on the end of those balls because he's proven he can be very successful in those situations. So last night specifically was a game that was calling out for Big Pat. Big picture, I don't think we are a good club without Aujamon right now, and I think it's the combination of Aujamon, BL, and Zaha that really does the damage for Charlotte FC, not necessarily either any one of those three individuals. So, yeah, I like the way they combine, and I think Toke Lamotte's good. I just think he just had a bad game in a time when they needed a good game from him. Tiger Smalls back. I think maybe I would have liked to see Tiger a little sooner last night. I would have liked to see him be able to get up a little sooner, unfortunately, when he was knocked down in the injury time, which kind of led the extra minutes that let Philly get the winner, but that's not his fault, he was hurt. But yeah, without Pat, if we're just relying on Toke Lamotte and Tiger, I think that's insufficient right now.
And it's not because, like, I'm not having a tactical discussion with you, like, Patrick Aujamon needs to be in the lineup. No, it's more so just like, there's rumors that Pat is going to go abroad.
Right.
There's rumors that the transfer market is interested in the player.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Charlotte and Patrick's representatives, his agent, the contract talks have stalled.
Right.
And
yeah. We also know he's about to have an international showcase at the Gold Cup where they can potentially only increase the interest in him from other clubs.
Right. So I think last night was like a window into, like, are we comfortable with looking at what the future looks like without Patrick Ajimong if he does move this summer, if he does move in January?
Right.
Like, are we comfortable with that? And I think that the answer to that for me is, like, absolutely not.
It's
like
a resounding no at this point, yeah.
Like, I don't know. If you're Zoran Crneta, to me it's like, by the way, we saw Zoran. He flew up with the team.
We got a wave, an over-the-shoulder wave as he walked down the tunnel. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter to me whether I get a chance to say hello to Zoran or not. I mean that because, like, Zoran to me is a guy that needs to do the job, and just I appreciate him flying with the team. I appreciate him always being there, and I think he's done a decent job putting the squad together.
For sure.
But I don't know how he shows up to a road atmosphere without Patrick Ajimong. I don't know how he went to bed last night. I don't know how he wakes up this morning. I don't know how he starts his work week without realizing, like, damn, like, this club is not the same when Patrick is not around.
Right.
There's a one of one that's on this squad, and if Zoran can't get that deal done, if Zoran is more interested in shipping Zaha off,
Ajimong,
thank you. If Zoran is interested in shipping Ajimong off, then, like, I don't think he's the right GM for this club.
Right.
I need Zoran to come out in the next month and say, we're trying to make this happen.
Right.
If he doesn't, I'm gonna just lay it out to you, frankly. I'm gonna say it's time for Zoran to go.
If he can't extend Ajimong?
Yes.
Oh.
I think that's it for me.
Yeah.
That's fair. It's it for me. If Zoran can't get the Ajimong deal done, he needs to be fired.
That's a bold statement.
I don't think it's a bold. How's that a bold statement? He's the United States men's national team striker, and he's on $70,000. Think about this. Zoran's making more money than Patrick is.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I think probably a lot of people in that building are making more than Patrick is, and, you know, it's whatever. But
I don't want to go down this road.
Regardless, it's not about the money. It's just about the principle. And I the reason I say it's a bold statement, Johnny, is because we live in a world where everyone equivocates these days, and people don't say decisive things. And so, for you to say, if this doesn't happen, then that's what needs to happen, is a bold statement, because we live in a world where nobody says anything of consequence anymore. And I like the fact that you just said something of consequence and put it out there. That's all.
Yeah, it's the job. Like, the job is to make sure that the roster is the best it can be.
Yeah.
It's not anybody's fault that the roster wasn't the best it could be last night. It's like MLS is playing through an international break, and that's what this league does. So therefore, you're shorthanded. But here's another problem, right? To move on from Patrick Ajimong, right? Because I don't want to do that segment every show. But I will bring it up. Why doesn't Lee Alabada start last night?
Right. Really,
like,
what the hell?
He's the DP. It's a road match against the top team on the table, and Lee Alabada's sitting his ass on his bench with Tiger Smalls, who is like a draft pick.
Right. Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah, and Abada looked great when he came on, too.
Of course he did.
That makes it even worse, for sure. And when we're playing that over-the-top, you know, counterattacking style, even though we did win possession, it was still, we played counterattack. That's you want a body. You want your speed guys, you know. So I don't think Kerwin's technicality was offered really much. I mean, he is a really good technical player, but that's not really. I didn't really see him part of any big moves or great creative passages of play. So I think it seemed like maybe the game would have been calling for an Abada from the start. I mean, and also you know, we talk about watching Dean work up close. Dean was in Kerwin's ear the whole time. He kept yelling, Kerwin. So I don't think Vargas was really giving him what he was looking for. Kerwin was pretty despondent on the bench when he came off. And you know, again, you have a bad day, you have a bad game, it happens. But it seems like maybe Dino had a bit of a bad game himself as well when you start looking at some of those analytical choices.
Well, yeah, game by game, fine. Like, you're going to have off nights. Mm-hmm. And that's why the points that I'm trying to make on this podcast are like, yeah, it's like, it's not about Leal Abada not starting against Philadelphia. It's like, I'm not looking at that in a silo. I don't have, like, the horse blinders on, mm-hmm. right? Like, I have my peripheral vision right now.
Love it.
And what I'm saying is,
is there anyone,
like,
in the lane over there?
Yeah.
Can I merge?
Yeah. Like, I just at a very super high level, why isn't one of your DPs starting? Like, yeah. Why isn't your DP starting?
Right.
Like, why are we playing the kid? Like, I just, sometimes I feel like this organization just makes it so much more difficult than it needs to be. Sometimes I feel like they're allergic to just making the simple choice.
Mm-hmm.
And the simple choice is starting Leal Abada on the road at Philadelphia because he's your designated player. He's one of the most pacey players in the league.
Right.
And you're going to have to score goals to win.
Right. It makes you wonder. Dean has always said that, you know, the way training goes in the week factors heavily into his lineup decisions. So, and he always says Kerwin trains well. Maybe Abada's been slacking off in practice. I don't know. I have no way of knowing that. But something is happening because you're right. It should be a no-brainer decision to start one of only two DPs you have on your roster. You'd think you'd want him in when you're facing the best team in the league at their place.
Yeah. The other DP that did start, Pep Bial was on the pitch. I thought that he was involved in the match. I thought that Philadelphia made it very difficult for him. And I think it's time. I think the other side of this coin, and I've said that already on the show, is like Philadelphia played really nice defense.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of teams play really nice defense in MLS. And what MLS does from a defensive perspective is, I'm sitting in the driver or the passenger seat of this car right now. I'm gonna take that hat off, and I'm gonna put my hat on that is I am an MLS manager.
Okay.
And if I'm an MLS manager, this is how my defensive meetings go every single week, right? I'm coming up against Charlotte. I'm coming up against Miami. I'm coming up against Vancouver. Like, the way this league works is, like, the best players on the team are very obvious.
Right.
Like, so when you play Charlotte, you're like, oh, Pep Bial is the creative midfielder. Like, let's shut him down.
Right. Don't let him do anything.
And that's kind of what's happening right now. And Pep Bial was shut down last night.
Yep.
But what that should do is it should open up for somebody else. And Zaha, that same way. Kerwin should have been the beneficiary of Philadelphia focusing on Pep Bial, of focusing on Wilfred Zaha. Mm-hmm. Kerwin should be the beneficiary of that. It should be one-on-one. It should be, he should be able to receive the ball with a little bit of space. And for
beat
some
a guy.
Reason,
take
yeah.
someone on. And
that
him,
just, like,
yeah.
didn't happen at yeah. all. It, like, didn't even come close to happening.
Right.
And as soon as Leal Abada comes in the match, like, he has those moments immediately.
Uh-huh.
So I think Pep Bial is still, you know, obviously he burst onto the scene.
Yeah.
In this league this season.
Not 9 contributions in 9 matches, right?
Yes, and that's maybe a product of MLS managers. Again, I got my MLS manager hat on.
Yeah.
And it's the beginning of the season, and I'm playing in Charlotte. And I'm like, well, shit, we got to make sure we shut down Wilfred Zaha and Patrick Hajiman. And Pep Bial goes to work.
Yep.
He has the space. He makes it happen. And when you're an MLS manager, like, you pay attention to what happens.
Right.
And 4 or 5 games into the season, all of a sudden, an MLS manager is like, well, we got to focus on Pep Bial.
Yeah.
This
guy gets no space anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
We see what he does with space. We're going to take the space away.
That's going to continue to happen. Like, I think the way this league works is you can burst onto the scene, but then you get figured out quickly.
A lot like a pitcher in Major League Baseball. Like,
yeah.
a young rookie pitcher will come up and no one's seen his stuff.
That's right.
And then, you know, he has 3 great starts out the chute, and then all of a sudden there's tape, you know? It happens with quarterbacks. You know, it happens with creative midfielders.
It does. And so, from my perspective, we are at that point with Pep Bial right now where you have to start getting creative tactically. Mm-hmm. Like, what is he actually going to do? What is Dino going to do in order to come up with a plan B for Pep? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, what is he doing? You know, we forget about playing on the wing, right? We tried that. Didn't work. I don't know what to do because, and the big question is, and I'm asking you, I'm taking my manager's hat off now, back in the passenger seat.
Welcome back.
Like, how impactful is the way Brant Bronico and Ashley Westwood play? How impactful is the way that they play to Pep Bial's success?
I think pretty impactful.
I mean, see, you need midfield partners,
right,
when you play midfield.
Right.
And, you know, Brant, got a chance to say hello to Brant. Obviously somebody who represents this club unbelievably well.
Yeah, at all
got,
times.
Got a chance to say hey to him. We did before the match and after the match as well. Told him, obviously, to, you know, keep his head up, keep working hard. Because that's what he does. And I think, like, you need that. We need somebody that... he's going to train this morning, and I bet Brant is doing that as we speak. Probably right. First thing this morning, he's taking care of himself, and he's back in the gym.
Yeah.
Because he wants to get back out there and make it happen again. We know what Brant is. We've known what Brant is. Like, he is exactly what we think that he is. And is he helping Pep? Is Westwood helping Pep? I'm trying to figure out what this midfield partnership looks like. And I'm if I'm being honest right now, it's a complete unknown for me.
Yeah. I mean, there's been times when they have, and then there's been times when Brant has gotten more forward sort of along with Pep, and then there's – and a lot of times that's when teams try – against the teams that try to high press us, it frees Brant to go forward more. But Westwood, his ventures forward into the attack have been few and far between. He scored the goal – you know, Dean said he had a nosebleed from coming so high up the pitch. It was kind of funny. And there was another moment a couple weeks ago where he found himself in the box with the ball at his feet again and just missed a chance.
I'm talking about passing.
Yeah.
Are these guys passing to each other? It doesn't seem like they're passing to each other.
Yeah, I'd have to watch a little more sort of
I don't think I
in
do.
Mind.
I just, there's, what connections
but
are
what
you
I
seeing?
See, what I see, just as I think about what I have seen, is that I do see, like, a lot more of the connecting passes are coming from outside in.
Yes, they are.
He's counting on the fullbacks to get the ball to Pep more so than Westwood, for
that's
sure.
Right.
I would say that I've seen that. I would hope that the data would back me up, but that's what I've seen anecdotally, for sure.
The eye test is, and the gut test typically is I think, something strong to go off of, and you're right. And just for Dean said tactically last night, he had on Saturday night against Philly, he had the fullbacks out wide, and he dropped Westwood back into, like, a back three.
Yeah,
with Privet
right.
and Milanda,
right.
which is a whole different conversation that we're not going to have tonight. Because
too tactical.
That's the opposite way
that I wanted to
go.
Yeah, yeah, you're right, exactly. Like,
I'm good with without Ashley Westwood being a center back.
Right, we don't need a third center back. We need a box-to-box midfielder. And right now, I just don't know that West... I mean, we have Brant. We have that in Brant, and maybe it's not West... Maybe it definitely... Actually, I know it's not Westy's role necessarily to be that, but I just feel like we've needed it, you know? Like,
yeah.
I always, like, love Westwood. Really cool guy to have a beer with. Been lucky enough to do that a few times. Seems like an awesome family man. I love the way he's embraced Charlotte and the United States and come over here and really, like, Dean Smith joked one time. He said, Westy's not even British anymore. He's American. As soon as he got over here, he culturally he became American. He embraced it, and it's I love all that. At the same time, like, if I'm looking, like, where should Charlotte use its third DP spot to improve a spot on the pitch, that's the spot I'm looking at. I have to, like, I've danced around that all season, and now I can make my own bold statement, which is that the number one spot for improvement for Charlotte FC right now is the defensive mid. And I love Westwood.
Yes.
I think he's good, but we can be better, and we need to be better there.
one thing that I'm noticing, Danny, is that every time we do this segment, it's like 50 minutes into the show.
It takes me that long.
But, yeah. Oh no, I just think it's like we'll have the conversation, but we are going to bury it in the back.
Yeah, exactly. It's never the lead item, for sure not. Yeah.
And I think that's a feature, not a bug of the show, for sure.
Yeah. Again, I've danced around this all year, but I think you're right.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's. I look at Dabril Diani sitting on the bench, and I'm like, man, why can't he get any time? You know, it was such a physical game last night. There were so many aerial duels.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many duels. There were so many duels on that pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And how good is Diani? Is great at the duel.
Yeah.
Diani is phenomenal at the aerial duel, at the ground duel. He's got his long frame. It's just really, really it suited that match, and I was disappointed to see it. I'll go down the statistical rabbit hole because I think it's important if we're going to have this conversation that we pick out the fact that, you know, Ashley Westwood was a 6.0 last night, and he was one of four on ground duels,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't win one aerial duel.
Right. Yeah, I'm just wondering if
and he lost possession 19 times.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a spot where you remember the time against New England where Diani tried to pass it to Zaha, and he passed it to space instead of to Zaha's foot, and it went out of bounds. Zaha kind of got mad and yelled at Diani, and then a bunch of New England fans yelled at him from the New England bench. All that, it was kind of a moment. Well, that happened last night. Westwood did the same thing, and Zaha didn't yell at the captain as like he would have at Diani. But it just shows that it's not like Diani is getting benched for making bad passes that other players aren't making. Is what I'm trying to say with that. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's time to give Diani like a really, really hard look.
Yeah.
And say like, you have the skill set, you've shown the ability to impact the game, and I know there's going to be people listening to this show that are like, what are you talking about, man?
Right. Right.
So I think Diani has been, I think he's been criticized unfairly.
Yeah, and I would say that that's probably a minority opinion in the fan base, but it's one that you've held with conviction for a while. It's authentic. So that's okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
To be disagreeable.
Yeah. Of course.
I mean, we play the blame game, right? That's one thing. Hey, one thing that we need to come up with on the show, and I think we're going to start doing this moving forward, is we need to come up with like some segments for like after a win or after a loss, like the blame game,
the Triple C Golden Boy of the match.
We were
on the road to it, and we veered.
Yes.
Okay, so I like the blame game. Who are we blaming?
If you had to pick one person to blame for, I think, all of this, I would say it'd be David Tepper. No, I'm just
kidding. It all goes back to Tepper. Yeah.
The buck stops here.
Right.
No, I think the blame game for me, it's definitely Dean Smith. I think he can. For me, I think Dino is. I think Dino's swimming right now. I think he's treading water, and he's not exactly sure how to get back on the boat. I think he's not like adrift, like with no help coming to save him. Like it's all there, and just like he needs to save himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has the tools to save himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think like he's using the tools properly right now. I think that he's kind of stuck in what he showed up with. I think that it feels like to me that Zaha was supposed to be just like a plug and play into what Dean was already doing. And I don't think that's good enough. I don't think that's close to good enough. I think you have to continually change. And I think Dean needs to take a look at this roster and be like, actually, like, who are the 11 guys that I need to play and start in order to get points for the rest of the season? And I think that the answer is just staring them right in the face, and it's pretty obvious to me. Like, you have to consistently You have to be able to take Westwood off. It's not a problem to start Westwood. I have zero issue with Ashley Westwood starting matches. But him going the full 90 like he did last night, I'm like, Baldiani just sits there on the bench?
Right.
I just don't think that's necessary.
And Bronny Bro comes off for Williamson, who was not bad.
It's a good call. I think it should be the other way around.
Yeah.
I think you could take Westwood off and put Williamson on and leave Bronico on the pitch.
I think that I wouldn't mind living in the parallel universe where that happened last night. Result, it's just would have been. I don't know if the result would have been different, but it would have been interesting to see.
Well, because you talk about box to box and Bram Bronico, it's like because he can do it. He can do both. Get you someone that can do both.
Yeah.
Like he's willing to go forward and he's also willing to sit back. Mm-hmm. And late in the match, you need someone in that engine room on the defensive midfield that is willing to put in a shift. And I'm not saying Westwood's not willing to put in a shift. I actually think that Westwood stays in the game because of his set piece ability.
Right. And organizational, the ability to sort of organize players and tell guys where to go. Leadership. Right.
Yes. Absolutely. But at this point, I mean, they all need to know that.
Right.
And the other elephant in the room when it comes to Ashley Westwood is just like Pepe Al is just as good at free kicks as Ashley Westwood.
Right.
So you don't need to leave Westwood on the pitch to have a free kick specialist. Free kicks.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
In the past, that was not the case for this club.
Correct. Yeah.
It's different now with Pepe Al.
Everything you're saying sounds like it's time for it's like Dean made all his sort of adjustments for what he was going to do this season and took the league by storm for the first 10 weeks, and then the league has adjusted to what he's doing and sort of shut it down, found ways to deny Pep Biel space, found ways to frustrate Zaha, found ways to disorganize the defense that had been so organized. It's time for the readjustment. It's time for that readjustment to the adjustment. We talk about this in the context of a game all the time, halftime adjustments.
Yes.
It's halftime of the season.
That's right.
So it's time for some halftime adjustments in the big picture that are going to make this team have some teeth and go out and actually put some fear of opponents on the road. And, you know, it's great that opponents fear the atmosphere of coming into Bank of America Stadium. It's great that they, like, there's that psychological, oh, that's a tough place to play. It's better when you're a tough team to play against. And, you know, I'd rather teams fear the quality of our players more so than the character of our atmosphere. And, it's not a shade of the atmosphere, but it's just, it kind of goes without saying that players win games, not cheering.
Of course. And that's a great way to put it, Danny, where we are at that halfway point. The changes need to happen, and here's what the roadmap looks like.
We're on the road, please.
Yes.
plug that thing into Google Maps.
Hey, this is what our GPS is showing right now. It's destination October 18th. It's going to be a while till we get there. But in the very near future, we're looking at a road match against Kansas City.
First time we've ever played them.
On June 25th. We're talking about
I could be wrong about that.
I think it is the first time we've ever played them.
Yeah.
I think so. I think you're right about that. So we're going on the road.
Right.
And we've got there's a lot of time.
And that's midweek, right?
That's a Wednesday midweek match at Kansas City. Right now, Kansas City.
We don't play it again next weekend.
No.
Yeah, crazy.
Off next weekend.
Yeah.
Right now, Kansas City is on the table below Charlotte, 26th overall MLS. For me, it's a winnable match on the road. Kansas City is 4-4-10 on the season. That's one. Is Patrick Ogeron going to be back by then?
I think so, but maybe not.
Check in with us.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the Gold Cup schedule looks like.
Regardless, I think that it's a game that should be considered go get 3 points on the road, because the Kansas City profiles a lot like Toronto and Montreal, which are the two teams that Charlotte has beaten on the road this year. So.
Right. And then you have another road match at Chicago. Gonna that's be a little 3 days after that.
Going to be a little tougher.
So basically...
Chicago's good.
Yes. Yes, Chicago's good, and they're nipping at Charlotte's heels right now on the table.
And they pasted Charlotte 4-1 in Charlotte. At the lowest point of this season so far, that was, I would say.
So, you've got the next two matches are a Saturday, Wednesday, both on the road, at Kansas City, at Chicago. At this point, you have to look at those two matches and say, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Speed check ahead on the road, you know? Yeah.
Like, after everything that we just discussed on this episode, I don't know how you look at those two matches and say, oh, yeah, Charlotte's going to get back, you know, turn things back around. Things are going to get back on track, and they're going to go get 6 points on the road. And,
Like,
I just...
There's no evidence that would suggest that.
Absolutely. There's just... The only bit of hope is that, like I mentioned, Kansas City's record is bad.
Right.
They only have 4 wins. So maybe Charlotte can go get a point there. And Charlotte has won on the road in Chicago. They have done that before.
That's true.
So maybe they do that.
Not without Carol Swiderski. Shout out to everyone still holding the candle for Carol, by the way. I know some of you are out there. I might be joining you soon. You know?
So the next two matches are very difficult. And then finally... on July 4th weekend.
Finally come home.
Charlotte hosts Orlando, and then the following week, following Saturday, they host New York City, and then they host DC United. So, 2 road matches, 3 home matches after that. And I think that the reason why I wanted to finish the episode this way is because it kind of like, it closes the loop on everything that we were saying. Like, if somehow, some way, you can just dig deep and get 2 points in those 2 road matches and then go home and win, your season can start to shift. All of a sudden, you collect more than 10 points. And then
11 out of 15 would be amazing.
Exactly.
Right.
And you're back in the playoff picture. You're maybe thinking about, okay, maybe we can get a top five. Maybe we can finish fourth in the league. Can pick up that summer momentum, only to be halted by, of course, the famous Leagues Cup.
Leagues Cup, we got to play Ciudad Juarez, you know.
So, what do you need to see happen over the next couple months? Is it results based? Is it purely results based for you at this point? Like, what do you need to see happen?
For my soul.
Yeah. Like, for your relationship, everybody has a different relationship with the club, and I think that's important.
Right.
Like, and that's why I want to make this show less about the grind of the matches, the wins and the losses. It's more so about everyone's relationship with the club, what makes you happy, and what do you need to see over the next month or so?
I need to see goals, to be honest. I could think about the answer that I would think the audience would want to hear, or what you would want to hear. But when I look inside myself, I just love to see goals get scored, and I want to see the club win. But I would rather lose 5-4 than draw 0-0 any day. You know, like maybe I'm crazy for thinking that, but I'm there to be entertained. I go to soccer matches to have fun. I love goal celebrations. I can live, despite the loss and knowing it should have been a draw last night, that Zaha goal celebration, and like you and me high-fiving your dad and turning to all the Philly fans and just like sticking it to them, that was like, that's fed my soul. That's like soul food for me. So I just love to see goals scored. I'd like to see this team just be more entertaining and attacking and fun, to be honest. I mean, I know results are fun. It is fun to win. I get it. But if you can't win, at least score some goals, you know?
Well, yeah, I do know a manager that's out there that does play front foot football.
I know where you're going with this.
I do know a manager out there that has a good relationship with Leo Labada.
Yeah.
That knows how to coach players at the highest level, who is available right now.
Yeah.
That does happen to have a relationship with our general manager.
Yeah.
As well.
All of this is true. Yeah. I'm not calling. I mean, Dino's my guy.
I'm not saying. In no shape or form am I saying.
You're just telling me if I want goals. If I want goals, you know what up.
There's somebody that was going to go out there and get you some. Okay. They guarantee just by the style of play.
Noted and taken under consideration for sure.
And I can tell you, as a Spurs fan, when you're sitting 15th on the table, but you still got like a million goals, you're like, what the hell is going on?
Okay. Maybe I wouldn't like it as much as I think I would, but that's what I think I want anyway.
But to be fair, I do think that, you know, Ange Postecoglou is not going to be Charlotte FC's manager. There's no doubt about that. But I think Dino should maybe try to get closer to Ange Ball than he is right now.
Yeah, maybe bring Ange in to consult. You know, get him to HPP at some training sessions. Just talk to the guys.
Right. Because there's set up a call. Have Zoran just kind of. If Ange and Dean don't know each other, just slightly suggest that maybe we should get together and think about how Liel Abada was used at Celtic. Right. And I'm sure those conversations have been had, but man, it's just one of those things where I love hearing you talk about that. Like, that's a great way to. That's another segment. Soul food.
Soul food. Yeah.
You know, it's like what happened in that match that really fed your soul and. I'm gonna take a short-term view and a long-term view because I do want to. Now that I mentioned that, I do want to mention from Saturday night against Philly something that fed my soul. This is probably gonna surprise you for a little bit.
I love it.
But the one thing that fed my soul last night was seeing Ben Bender play for Philadelphia.
you got to be honest. If that's what did it, that's what did it. You know, it's like it's not what
seeing Ben Bender back on the pitch. You can go back and listen to episode. We're on it. What episode number are we on right now? Like 100.
I think 220. I think
220.
Yeah. In that range.
You can go back and listen to probably episode like 35.
Okay.
And you'll hear us talking about Ben Bender in a way that's like, man, this kid is just brilliant on the ball. He just always wants to go forward. He's a goal scorer. He's a poacher. Right. He's the only guy on this team.
Right.
Like that.
He makes such runs and he never gets the passes. I definitely said that multiple times.
You know, it's like it's a real thing, and it's, and just kind of feeling like, you know, and I also want to make the point. There's some things about Ben Bender off the pitch that I do not like at all.
Fair enough.
But on the pitch, I'm attracted to his style of play.
Yeah.
And I felt like he kind of got a raw deal, just kind of. Somehow fading off of our squad.
Yeah. Well, he just was always. I mean, once Pep Biel came in, it was kind of like they did the same thing, and Pep was better. But it didn't have to be that way. But just that's the way it was.
Yeah. Exactly. And when he went to the Tampa Bay Rowdies, and he just like wasn't like having the best.
Right. We would have loved to see
him like dominate. Experience. Yeah.
It would have been nice to see him go down and just absolutely dominate.
I was a little bit concerned about his future. And last night, what I saw from Philadelphia is, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw Ben Bender hosting the Supporters Shield at the end of the season with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if I see him playing a crucial role in MLS. And if that happens,
this is not because he played 90 for them a couple games ago. This is not like this was not like we're running the kid out against his former team. Like he's become a part of their team very quickly, integrated since they signed him.
He's like the perfect Philadelphia Union player.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah, he grew up in the area.
But as far as long-term, you know, what can feed my soul over the next couple months, I think it's seeing the best players start.
Okay.
It's like Dino picking his 11 and saying, like, these are my guys. And it's Zaha, it's Ajumong, it's Abada, it's Biel. Like those four, like, need to play.
Yeah.
And they need to play together all the time.
And we have said protect Kerwin Vargas at all costs, but right now he's not in that four.
No. He's a really nice player on the bench.
Yeah.
Like, as I'm saying, protect him at all costs. Like, this is nothing against Kerwin Vargas.
Right.
It's just like, no, get on. Like, you're a great player on this team from a squad perspective. It's really nice to have Kerwin as part of this organization, and I want nothing but the best with Kerwin. But if the four players that I just mentioned can play together and play together regularly, this team has a chance to be kind of box office. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the top front fours in MLS.
Yeah. You got to think. I mean, it's world-class players.
That to me would be soul food as the season rolls on to see those four play together. And as much as I like defense right now, we're not good enough on defense to give a shit. We got to score goals.
Yeah. And that's how it always has been in MLS, is you don't win by being, like, the best defensive team. You don't win the cup or the shield by being the best defensive team in the league. You win by scoring goals because it's a top-heavy league. It's a league that puts 90% of the financial resources into attacking talent, and you got to be able to keep pace with that. You're not going to shut that down in the long run.
Right.
It's great. The clean sheets are great. We love celebrating, oh, Charlotte's clean sheets. You know, oh, Dino, another bottle of wine for the boys, Dino, and all that, you know. But we need goals. We need goals.
It's Charlotte Soccer Show. It's Charlotte Soccer Show Road Trip Edition.
Kept it in between the lines, baby. Yeah, only nearly missed one exit. You know, we're doing good.
You made me nervous a few times, but I was able to keep it together here on the podcast. It's a pleasure hanging out with you, doing another audio-only episode, our second in a row, which is always fun. Stay tuned for more interviews, Danny. You've got the MLS season pass crew coming in, and I think what I'm hoping for, as you continue to do those interviews and we continue to talk as well, is I hope some of the things that we talk about during these podcasts can help those interview shows as well.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of times these national guys, they come onto the show and they have a perspective. And I think I'm interested in hearing their perspective on a lot of the things that we discuss.
Okay. I like that.
So I appreciate you having them on, and I appreciate you making them a part of the show.
It's great. And just for the TIFOs out there, if there's a certain Apple person that you want us to get, let us know, because we can put in requests. We don't always get it, but, like, usually they come to us and they're like, hey, who do you want to talk to this week? So, I mean, if you want to hear from someone, let us know. We try not to be too repetitive. We try to mix it up. I always try to lean towards, like, the people who are going to be calling the game that week if possible. That's why we had Kaylin Carr, because we have Neil the week before, Tony Husband 2 weeks before that. But love talking to the Apple crew and generally get good feedback from the TIFOs, and if there's a certain person on their crew that the TIFOs want, put the request in online. We'll make it happen.
And I also want to give a shout out to the other folks out there that are talking about Charlotte FC, that are covering Charlotte FC, especially to Carol Walton. It's so nice to have somebody that, like, you know, post-match last night, you're driving home, you're like, I wonder what Dino said, just like pulling up Carol's feed.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, being all over it.
Yeah, vital feed. Vital post-game feed, for sure.
Is Carol Walton becoming like the Adam Schefter of Charlotte FC?
I think so.
Ian Rappaport of Charlotte FC?
Clearly, she always has been, for sure. Yeah.
A
trustworthy source.
Yeah, and there's so many other people out there as well that cover this club and talk about this club.
And it's tough. 4 years in, we've been doing this for 4 years, and there's times when just the momentum's not there. We do it as a hobby. It's not like a moneymaker, so . Like, sometimes we want really fired up to do it, like today. Other times it might be a lull, and all the other people that are doing the content probably feel the same thing. It's tough to keep. Anyone who started covering Charlotte FC for fun in 2020 and is still doing it in 2025, like,
shout out props to you. To you. Yeah, shout out to you. Keep going. This club needs it. I think we've always said the worst thing that could happen. And I feel bad for naming Carol, because now I feel like I need to name everybody else.
You know who you are.
Yeah. So I just think the club needs it. The club needs the coverage. Mm-hmm. And I know there's people out there grinding to cover the team, that it's not, you know, making you rich and famous.
Right.
And that's okay, because nobody else is doing it. Like, you go to any local traditional media outlet, bit my tongue there. Because it's not what it used to, it's not how it used to be.
Yeah.
You go to any local media outlet, and for the most part, they're not covering this team.
Right. The Observer, the WCNCs, they'll do some token coverage.
The big moments. And then they're about to cover the Club World Cup.
Right, yeah.
Coming to town. Right, that's where exactly. That's where all the cameras are going to be.
Right.
That's where all the stand-up news reports are going to be
flash.
From.
It's about whatever's the flashiest, not necessarily what is...
Yeah.
Got the most deep roots.
Oh, so I appreciate all the fan content out there. And
always have.
And we'll promise. We'll keep tabs on what everybody's doing, and maybe we'll do some crossover episodes soon. Maybe we'll get out there and talk to some folks, because I really want to invigorate the community to keep this team relevant.
Right. It's like we're like a crucial point.
Right.
It's like a crossroads in the life of the club, I feel. Are we going to continue to see a sustained level of support at the energy level when the club launched, or are we dwindling down to diehards already?
Right. And I've been nothing but impressed at the attendance numbers this year. The fans are phenomenal. Charlotte FC fans are the best. And that's why I'm just like, they deserve to be served.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of why I am that way.
I like that.
It's not just to do it. It's like, our fan base is so freaking good that, like, we need to feed the beast.
Right.
And the only people that are doing it are people that are barely getting paid for it for it at all.
Right, exactly.
And I appreciate the hell out of that. So cheers to you. I hope we see you at the Keep on the 5th?
July 5th,
we'll be there on the 5th for sure. And, Danny, it's always a pleasure doing the show. Make sure you follow the show on YouTube. That's the place to follow the show for sure, Charlotte Soccer Show on YouTube. As always, Danny,
for the crown, baby.